A podcast to honor the gods.
This better come with a sacrifice.
Deus Ex Media.
Welcome to the restricted section. Wait, what the fuck? Oh. Okay. I'm looking at my notes and I copy and paste like the notes from the last season into this document. And I just didn't update the date. So I was starting to read and then it said releasing September 2022. And I was like, what? Okay, but no, this is correct. Okay. Welcome to the Restricted Section, the podcast that started out all innocent and doe-eyed and has not radicalized us at all. If you haven't done the reading, don't worry. We'll do it for you. Here's what we're talking about this week. Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, Chapter 2, In Memoriam, in which Harry Potter, he's a pretty special boy. I'm your host, Christina. My co-host today is Andrew. Say hello to the listeners, Andrew.
Hi, everyone.
Jesus fuck, man. Put some zazz in it.
Hi, everyone. How are we doing today? Woohoo!
Nope.
Just making the audio a nightmare to edit.
Sorry about that.
I feel like the more I tell you that you scream and mutter, the greater the difference between your two ends. My other host today is Brooke. Say hello to the listeners, Brooke.
What is up?
Hi, everybody. How are we doing today?
Doing great. Stoked to be here for the chapter that dares to ask, what if we don't know our teachers that well?
Teachers, do they have other lives?
Oh my god.
In honor of this incredibly boring chapter, I have decided on a special treat for you and eventually the listeners of this podcast, and that I will be drinking my one annual beer during the recording of this
episode. Oh my god. Okay, well, wait, Brooke, is that leftover from the vacation we went on 2 months ago?
Yeah, I haven't found an opportunity to get it in.
And I will say that she, to this vacation, she brought three from a four-pack or six-pack and said, leave me one. So Leela and I each drank one. This is the one. And how long had you had this beer before that trip? Was it Christmas or even earlier?
Yeah, it's got to have been like Christmas or New Year's thereabouts.
Okay, which makes perfect sense. Brooke's not a drinker. There she goes. But it's just very funny to me. Tell the listeners what you're drinking, since it's such a rare occasion and it's a very good beer.
Yeah, it is. So Vossen Brewing is in Richmond, Virginia, where we all live, doxing your asses. It's their dark Mexican lager. They make a regular Mexican lager and they make a dark Mexican lager. They're the only beers that I will ever drink. And I drink like literally one of them a year.
Yeah.
Just to stay edgy.
Yeah, they are quite good. I mean,
they're just very delicious.
There's nothing better than a Mexican lager, in my beer-loving opinion. And making it dark is just like a little bit of added, like, je ne sais quoi for people who are, like, sick of Coronas.
They brew it with lime peel and sea salt, like, in the mash. So I think I think it is very delicious. I have taken sips of various beers over the years, mostly to like add them to recipes because I have to understand the flavor profile that I'm working with. This is the only beer I ever took a sip of and I was like, I might drink some in addition to adding this to the beans. So
what constitutes a Mexican lager?
I don't know, but I can taste it in my mouth.
It's got to just be the brew process. It's the same way as like a German lager is like a type of beer. You know what I mean? Like I think a Mexican lager is just a type of beer.
Okay. Yeah, like to me, it's like so much. I'm really bad at describing this kind of thing. Like I love coffee, beer, and wine, but I can't really tell you anything about them. But like to me, a Mexican lager is like lighter and like less like bready, like a lot of like a very standard lager, like a fucking Bud Light. That's just bread. That tastes like bread.
How dare
not
you.
Good bread, like Wonder Bread. It just does. And so I think that like I think a Mexican lager is just like a little more refined than that, although, you know, you can still have a shitty ass Mexican lager, but it's just like, goddamn, they're good. I love Mexican lagers
like,
so
this
much.
Is a great Mexican lager. I would say the Vossen one is very good. If you see it anywhere ever, you should get it for yourself.
And you apparently don't have to add lime to it if there's already lime vibes inside.
It's brewed with lime. It's nice.
Yeah. Hell yeah. And Vossen's great. I've been there like kind of a lot, even compared to like the other local breweries. I love their energy.
They also have like a really dope, like heavy commitment to sustainability and supporting unusual outdoor sport activities that don't usually get a ton of sponsors.
Oh yeah. I feel like I was there when like a climbing team was there once or something. And I think my friend Emily, when she plays club kickball in the spring or summer or fall, I think they go there. Like, I think you're right. Like, I feel like I've noticed that.
They have a group called the Vagabonds that are just people that do like dope outdoor activities, like ultra marathons and like mountain climbing and, you know, mountaineering and all kinds of cool stuff.
I love
stuff.
That.
Yeah.
I was in Vossen Brewery when I learned that Ruth Bader Ginsburg had died, and I burst into tears.
What a memory.
I know. And not so much about her as the situation, you feel me?
I remember that night. We were there together. I was there too.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't remember you because you're a man and it wasn't your time to shine.
No, it was not.
Hey guys, is this maybe a little boring to you? Did you come here for Harry Potter? I hate to break it to you. This is much more entertaining than the chapter.
Yeah.
Are you telling me that you don't like reading an obituary?
No, not for so many pages either. But before we get into it, I do want to know, because this is the first time y'all are both coming on for this book. Brooke, I want you to tell me, like, what do you remember about this book that isn't just the movie? Do you have anything in that little head?
Great question. Like, the answer is surely, but I couldn't tell you what.
Yeah.
Like, here's the thing. I deeply remember, this is the book where Hedwig dies.
Sure. Yep, sure.
I remember reading that.
I bet you do. Fucking traumatizing.
Very traumatizing.
That's the one where I was like, surely she's going to pop up any minute now. Nope. until like a chapter later. And I was like, oh,
yeah,
no.
Yep, yeah. So I distinctly remember reading Hedwig dying. I read this book like cover to cover overnight after staying up till midnight to get it.
Yeah.
Like, and so
yeah.
How much did my brain retain of that? Probably not much.
Just scientifically.
I do also like, I have a more in-depth memory of the whole scene of him trying to get the locket out of the lake where he sees the Patronus and all of that, and then like meets Ron after he's like run away from them. I have a book memory of that scene because I remember more details.
Sword.
Yeah.
I think you might have said locket, and I was like, bitch, that's not even this book.
No, I'm sorry. No, yeah. Where he like finds it in a pond.
Yes, yeah, totally. Because that's the kind of thing. Main character almost drowning in a freezing lake. That's the kind of thing where you cannot make that look as intense as it is treated.
No.
You just can't.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's like, blah, blah, blah.
And then, you know, of course, we remember the infamous Molly, you bitch, get away from my daughter, you bitch line.
Legendary. That's... Can't wait to read that in the, what I'm sure is going to be a 3-hour long Battle of Hogwarts episode. Andrew, what do you remember about this book?
My problem is I've only ever seen the seventh movie, like part one and two, maybe like two times. I've read the book way more times than I've seen the movie. And I could not tell you which one's from which. Like, things
okay,
in my
I feel
memory,
you.
If I'm being
yeah,
honest.
Yeah, okay. Nobody wants... Here's the thing. When you have a seven-book series, the last book is all resolution. It's all denouement. It's pure tension, everything is destroyed, and we're just desperately trying to put it back together. And like, to me, I emotionally can't just jump into that. I can't just jump in.
Mm.
That's how I feel.
Well, that's why you have this chapter. It's like easing into like a nice warm hot tub. It's not. This chapter has the energy of watching wallpaper, but like, I think that this movie, book, Jesus fuck, I'm not doing great tonight already. this book, I will say one thing that I really like about it, and narratively something that actually really works for me, is the Deathly Hallows element of it, because we had never heard of them before. The whole book is titled Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, and much like Prisoner of Azkaban, much like a lot of the titles, it is the mystery of this book. You're going through it and you're like, I don't know what this is. We start the book with this title and have no introduction to the concept.
It's the hook. The title is the hook.
Yeah. So I do think that that works within this narrative. I think it gives you something that like feels more compelling than just wrapping things up.
Yeah.
That there is this thing to solve.
Did either of y'all ever read those books that were published that were like the unofficial yep. prediction books oh, about yeah. like...
no, I didn't.
Oh my gosh. I think I still have mine.
I think I have like Whoa. One or two as well.
Yeah.
Whoa, find those. That's
I will
so crazy.
Look in my parents' storage unit and see if I can drag one out for you. But it, I mean, because some of them were like pretty decent, right? Like they yeah. actually kind of like did a pretty good job. But some of them were clearly like the, you know, what the late 2000s equivalent of like an AI generated thing. They just got someone to put together every like oh, wizard yeah. related thing that they had in a book and were like, this is a Harry Potter guide.
It was honestly the craziest thing about the Harry Potter guides to me was that it was actually probably my first foray into like a non-classroom structured idea of like an analytical companion to a text.
Wow.
Because, I mean, here's the thing. That sounds like a big reach for what we're talking about, but it was a thing where they would be like, hey, like this thing that they're discussing is actually based in these five folklore elements, and that's why we think this is going to happen because narratively it aligns, blah, blah, blah. And yeah. it was like, hey, like every time, one thing that I distinctly remember from those books is they're like, every time Ron jokes about something, it ends up coming true.
And oh, yeah.
every time yep. he's serious about something, he's never right.
Yeah, I've heard that too, along with Hermione. Very sexist thing that I'm about to say. Hermione is always right unless she's emotional.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why they're great together or whatever. I don't know.
The thing that works the least about this book always will be the romance between Hermione and Ronald Weasley.
I eagerly look forward to breaking that down. I feel like she really like creates this want. I mean, she like manufactures a desire in the readers for them to get together by removing Ron for like a yeah. third of this book. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh my God, Hermione's so sad. Wouldn't she be less sad if they were together? Yeah. And so you're like asking for it because the time when Ron's gone is very boring and sad.
I gotta wonder whether or not like younger listeners will remember or will know that there was a whole point where there was like the people who genuinely and truly thought that Hermione was going to end up with Harry. Cause that was like a big, a big thing at one point is is she going to end up? She's going to end up with one of the two main characters.
Yeah. Because every book is me, my best friend, and that girl, one of us is going to fuck.
Yeah, it's
That's
the Top
like,
Gun scenario.
So many books.
Well, it's also, I mean, I don't know. Don't fuck your friends. I know that's a bold statement in this particular friend group.
Andrew and I avoided eye contact.
I'm like, in 98% of situations where it's like, we've been friends since we were 11. I'm like, you don't want to have sex with that person. You might think you do. You do not.
This is actually hilarious timing because our episode of Burn Before Reading today.
So sorry. This is actually our episode of Burn Before Reading next week. Today, our episode is about Twilight. Please go check it out.
Is about this. About fucking, not fucking, but about dating a friend and then being like, wait, did I just ruin everything?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So go listen to that podcast.
I don't know. Like, conflict resolution is a whole different thing with when you're with a friend. And transitioning that into a romantic context.
That's hard.
It's tough.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. What were we talking about? Why are we talking about this? Oh, Hermione.
You know. Yeah, tropes, books, themes.
I don't remember ever. I don't remember any of reading these books originally. I don't know why, but I don't remember ever wondering who Hermione would end up with or ever being bummed that it was not Harry because
yep.
I've always really loved Hermione and Harry's friendship for being like so pure, so supportive, and in my reading of it, completely and 130% platonic.
Agreed.
Like I've always just really respected that choice.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. I think also just, you know, given the time in my life, I don't know, I was a theater kid, right? So I had more male friends than I think a lot of people do in like high school.
Yeah, I feel you.
You know what I mean?
And almost none of them were gay.
Oh, I mean, well. But you know what I mean? It's like, regardless of that, you end up in a lot of situations where you're like, yeah, I spend a lot of time in like genuinely mixed company, and I'm only interested in, and of all of these people, I'm only interested in these two.
Yeah.
Bagged them both.
I'm just daydreaming about all the times I got felt up in the costume loft of my theater department.
Dude, we called ours cold storage, and it was completely detached from,
what do you mean?
From the actual theater area, because the only place they had for us was above the workout room behind the gym. So you had to get a key from the theater teacher to go to cold storage. And what you would do is you'd be like, hey, I'm going to pull costumes, or like, we need some props. You would grab the key, and then as you walked through the school, you would just find any of your friends, and everybody would come to cold storage with you, and we would just hang out and, like, have fun.
Man, I miss high school.
There's a weird movie that one of my friends made that is floating around the internet somewhere of all of us just, like, trying on random costumes and, like, saying in increasingly weird voices the phrase cold storage.
Oh, my God.
That might sound fun, but I played football, so I got to give myself brain damage and then go shower in group showers. So I'm just saying, you know, pluses and minuses.
Andrew, that's what I like about you, all your sad stories. So Harry Potter was bleeding.
No.
He was bleeding. He's bleeding. He literally just poked himself.
Here's the thing. Do we always have to say that it's number 4 Privet Drive? Like, we fucking know.
It's like a refrain. Like, I don't know. She's like, y'all know the details, but I'm going to tell you anyway. It's like at the beginning of recording when I say, okay, we're going to synchronize our audio. I'm going to count to 5. Please join me for 4 and 5, even though everyone knows what we're doing.
It has the, like, repetition of trying to teach a, like, 5-year-old before they go to kindergarten where they live.
Wait, that's so
or almost like they were trying to like pad their word count, right? Like, we've got to always say number 4 Privet Drive.
This book is already a doorstop, and it is ostensibly a children's book.
He said as if, because that could not possibly have been the case in a million years. We're at Privet Drive. That's actually my first bullet point that I skipped. It says Privet Drive.
Number 4 Privet Drive. We always have to specify.
Would you believe we're at number 4 Privet Drive? But, guys, it's the last time. So that's cool.
I have so many questions about, and I swear to God, we can go through this chapter faster. You're going to have to cut me off if you want to cut me off.
I just don't care.
If we cut you off, this whole episode is going to be 10 minutes. So let's go ahead and let you keep going a little bit.
So we start off with, he trips over a cup of tea and he's like, ah, Dudley's booby traps. What?
Yes, he's going to get a Band-Aid because he's bleeding. This actually does come up, yeah. I think, in the next chapter.
Because he doesn't know how to heal things, right? Or are we talking about the tea?
The tea.
Oh. The tea comes up, yeah.
The tea comes up in the next chapter.
It's foreshadowing for the next chapter.
Do you want me to spoil it, Brooke?
Okay, yeah, what is with tea?
In the next chapter or the next chapter, I don't know. It's like 1 to 4, 3 chapters. Hold on, what's the next fucking
chapter?
It's
the next one.
It's the next chapter. when Harry, the Dursleys are leaving to go into hiding with a witch and a wizard, and Harry is also leaving to go into hiding, but like not until the moment of departure does Dudley realize that Harry's not going with them. He's going like separate. And so Dudley takes the opportunity to say, I think his exact words are like, I don't think he's a waste of space, is how he starts this. And then he says something like, something to the effect of, like, why isn't he coming with us where we will know that he's safe? But he has to go save the world or whatever. And then Harry is like, oh, maybe that wasn't a booby trap. Maybe that was just
Dudley
tea.
Making me tea.
Yes.
It was friendship.
You'll never know love. Well, friendship.
Oh, wow.
So it's 4 days, 4 Privet Drive. 4 days until his birthday, 4 days until he can use magic freely as a wizard who has come of age.
Wow. Good repetition.
So?
Four.
Why are you saying four?
I don't know.
Okay, 14 is...
Four?
Stop saying four.
He's bleeding because he's been Marie Kondoing his trunk that he has never once cleaned out. Even when he was locked in his room for weeks, he never cleaned out his trunk.
I can relate to that. Like, my trunk would have been very much just not... It would have had the same layer of slightly composted material.
Gross.
Yeah.
I'm a cleaner. I keep my shit clean.
I'm not a cleaner, but I still unpack my shit to the bottom.
Unpacker. Yeah, to the bottom. The thing that cut him was the sliver of the mirror from Sirius, which is now mostly broken from just being loose in a trunk, I guess.
No, there's a point where he's like upset
and breaks it
pretty intentionally.
Oh, really?
He like slams it in the trunk post Sirius' death and it shatters.
Okay, thank you.
This is a callback.
Still not great to just have it loose in a trunk, but that's fine. So he's the one who threw broken glass into his trunk and then never, ever, ever cleaned it or did anything, even though he has magic.
Why?
And he's waiting until now, when he doesn't have magic, to clean his trunk.
Yes, he's a very clever boy.
Why are you scooping your trunk out by hand when you could magic the items out?
Well, he can't for four more days.
He can't for four more days, and he can't wait 4 more days either, because we're doing
reasons.
This now.
Because he needs... denouement. I don't know. Why does he have to be doing this now? I guess, why not, right?
Wait, cleaning
because
the
we
trunk?
Need...
Yeah.
Because, like, when we're looking at him saying he's a special boy, he needs to be kind of, like, doing something.
Yeah.
Although, there's been at least one book where he's been asleep for half of this chapter, so maybe I'm not correct.
Well, here's
that.
The thing. What this chapter really needs to do is, like, a big, fat expo dump on Dumbledore.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no good way to do that. Like, in terms of situations in which people read an old newspaper, there's, like, not that many, right? There's you cleaning up your room in a haphazard way that, like, results in you wearing every hat you found. Like, you know, it's that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I'm slowly cleaning things and I am suddenly wondering why I never did play with this random slinky.
The slinky
God.
Of destiny.
That is such a Sean energy, honestly.
I get very easily distracted while cleaning. But I think it's like, if you're going to have a character read a newspaper, your options are that and breakfast, and it's pretty well established that he ain't going to be sitting at the kitchen table reading a newspaper and having toast.
Yeah.
I need just one moment, please. Oh my god. I have to X out of this. This is perhaps because I just spilled a little bit of drink into my keyboard, but my notes were typing.
Oh.
Without my
I see.
By themselves.
Encouragement. Yeah.
It's so like a player piano.
It's going so fast. What is happening?
It's like 19? A player piano, but it's just typing Harry Potter notes.
It's like an old West player piano.
I hope it's done. Are you done typing nines?
Yeah, I'm done.
It typed so many nines that it had to, like, just stop, and it just stopped.
Oh, it's
crying.
German. It's saying, no, 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 no. It didn't like this chapter very much either.
I mean, we just don't need it. It's the final book. We just don't need this. We spend way too much time worrying about Dumbledore in this fucking book. Why start right now? Anyway, he's going through his trunk. He's leaving behind his school things because he's setting off on an adventure. And the useful stuff he's packing into... a backpack, or as they say, a rucksack. So he is just flicking through old Daily Prophets, which are stacked next to Hedwig, and I put a little heart in my notes. That's fine. That's probably not the last time we're going to see her, really.
Oh, poor Hedwig. Why do you have to... Is it just because she would be hard to travel with?
Yeah, like, yeah.
Like, is this a plot function that Hedwig dies, or is it just, like, abject cruelty?
I think it's because... if he had Hedwig, then he could have reached out to Ron. In theory, he could have, like, sent a message to Ron.
People say it symbolizes the end of his innocence.
Mm.
I'm not joking. That is what they
say. No, I hear that. I just think killing the white owl as a symbol of your innocence is, like, a little much.
Initial. A little on the nose.
Oh, it is a little on the nose.
Your 11th birthday present owl as an that you got as an induction into Wizarding Society.
How long do snowy owls live?
Is this one of those situations where it really would have just been like, you know, a couple more years anyways?
It says that snowy owls can live for 10 years or more in the wild and 28 in captivity. But oh, Harry was shit. Not... Harry was not taking 28 in captivity level of care. Yeah.
I mean, in I'll all fairness, he was a 10-year-old when he got
I'll give her 12.
I mean, it's also, I don't know, man. The Hogwarts owl rookery concept is, like, I mean, they're feral, right?
Like, they're medium feral like cats.
Right.
I just think that, for the most part, Sleepy Joanne has gone to great lengths to kill people in a way, for the most part, that is easy and not a big deal. And one of the examples that we've talked about is in the last chapter, she killed off the only teacher we've never spoken to before, instead of killing a character that would escalate tension in a meaningful way. Mm-hmm. Also, like, she just is like, oh, I'm going to kill Tonks and Lupin because then it's like Circle of Life and we get like a whole new orphan for the next series or whatever. Like, I just feel like she be killing people in a way sometimes that is lazy. Obviously, she puts great care into the death of Sirius and, like, to some extent Dumbledore kind of. But, you know, for the number of people you be killing, we need to stop and think about this.
I will say the separating of the twins is a, you know.
That's a huge blow, but she doesn't have to do any work for it. You feel me? She just does it. And she's like, whoa, wasn't that dramatic?
Battle stuff. I mean, I don't know. I think she handles it well on the back end, to be honest. So, okay. In terms of random ass shit this boy finds while he's pretending to clean.
Okay, yeah, tell us.
Okay. Old quills, beetle sure. eyes.
Uh-huh, loose.
Single softs classic. That no longer fit. And a couple of shattered mirror pieces. We have one of those old school badges that say support Cedric Diggory and Potter Stinks interchangeably.
Oh my god. We were speculating. Why the hell were we speculating about if Harry Potter just smelled bad this whole time and that's why no one likes him? And then we were in last week's episode, I forget how it came up, and I was like, oh my god, they did have those badges that say Potter Stinks.
He's got the stethoscope. He's got a some sort of locket. Signed by an R.A.B.
Do you know what the locket is?
Yeah, the locket's the...
Okay.
Okay. The way he said that, I didn't know if you were like...
The fake Horcrux, it did sound like you kind of didn't know what you were saying.
Oh, sorry.
That's A-okay.
No, I was trying to, like, throw a little, like, eyebrows on it, you know? Like,
would you believe there's a locket in this trunk?
What?
He's got a plastic locket, and then finally he's got... just glass shards at the bottom.
And like you can fix glass. Something as hard to clean up as glass. Like, I don't mind running my Roomba. I don't mind dusting my shelves, but something like glass, if I could have magic to clean that instead of my bare hands, yes. Yes, I would like to use magic. Why is he doing this?
We've also got, hold on, we're not even nearly done with this list. He's got school and Quidditch robes, a whole cauldron, parchment, quills, all of his textbooks that he's just piled in a corner to be left behind.
Like, all of them.
Which, like, buddy, sell them on Chegg. They got some resale value. Use that to buy yourself something nice. He's got... And then he's like, okay, what are we taking? Muggle clothing, invisibility cloak, a potion making kit, which sounds bold because we've never been good at that, and we're leaving behind the one textbook that made us good at it.
True.
Certain books.
Maybe he does take the Half-Blood Prince.
It's porn.
He's 17.
It's porn. It's totally. Oh my god. That is penthouse letters.
Hermione later is like, I packed your backpack, and then she glares at him meaningfully.
The photograph album Hagrid gave him. A stack of letters, his wand, and then the Marauder's map and, again, the locket. And then he has not thrown out a single newspaper since he arrived home. So it's like...
That's insane.
Hey,
he's saving to recycle.
Well, no, this is like... This is one of those childhood trauma things where it's like, it seems like no one let you have possessions when you were younger, and now you just hold on to everything.
You want all of the possessions.
Little hoardery here, buddy.
Yeah, it really is.
Do you think that that was like a point of contention in he and Jenny's marriage later on? Because you gotta imagine that she was like, I grew up in an incredibly cluttered household with just so many things and people. Like, all I want is a nice, clean, Scandinavian-inspired space. And Harry was just like, yes. I simply cannot let go of this weird piece of plastic. You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
But Jenny, this gum wrapper is so important. It might be necessary later. I might have another piece of gum and need to dispose of it. And I will need the gum wrapper. So we're going to keep this.
What if I find the other sock?
The moment I throw this out, we're going to find the other sock.
Sometimes, because I'm going through this right now, sometimes you hold on to the sock because you're like, how on earth did you escape me? From here to the laundry room? What the fuck happened to you, fallen soldier? And it's disbelief and lingering hope that the other sock will return, because where could it have gone?
Sometimes it does.
Listen, I'm pretty sure I still have all the cords necessary to hook a printer up to a Windows 95 computer. So, like, I really have no room to talk on this front.
We have a basket of cords. Literally. Where we just, anytime we find a cord in the household, it goes in the basket of cords.
Now, here's the question. Basically, when you need a cord, do you ever actually go look in the basket? Okay, then you're better off.
We do look in the basket of cords. Mostly because Michael has a tendency to leave random cords around, and we also possess a toddler. So I am less forgiving about cords. I put all cords in the basket of cords.
Yeah. Sean and I, as you guys know, have an elaborate series of labeled bins for all of his many, 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 many cords. But then on top of that, we do have a variety of bins of cords. He's just like a cord guy living in a cord world where everything needs a cord.
But does he wear cord pants? Cords? Yes! There it
is. Oh my god, this picture of him that I text sometimes because it makes my heart melt from when he was like 2 years old. And he's wearing a red and black checkered flannel and a great, gigantic green 90s corduroys. And he's the cutest baby in the world. So yes, he has ever worn cords.
Can you tell how much we liked this chapter?
Guys, we need to take a pit break so I can check the length of this. By the time this comes out, Taylor will have received the bag I'm currently making.
Ooh.
Is this halfway?
If you meet me halfway.
No, it's not quite halfway. Need another inch or two. So he's flicking through old Daily Profits, and they do mention Charity Burbage, you know, that teacher we were all attached to, resigning from Hogwarts.
I just met her, fell in love with her, and then lost her, so.
Kill someone we care about.
I Roll dare
up,
you.
JK Rowling.
Charity Burbage is a wild name.
Yes, I want to say that I was making bong name jokes with her name last week, and our friend Phil said I should instead get a bubbler and name it Charity Bubblage, and I do think that is a superior option.
A good choice. It sounds like you have to be an old jowly British man to say it. Charity Burbage.
Yes. Yeah, totally. It's a very, like,
British-y. Uses parts of your mouth that we don't usually use.
I just think that they could have killed someone who mattered. Okay. Sardy Charity. I'm sure you... I said Sardy Charity.
Sardy Charity.
Or, like, have her do something sooner. If she's been there the whole time, what has she been doing? How did she feel about Professor Umbridge? Like, what does she have to say in the cafeteria? Like, what are we doing?
She's been teaching Muggle studies. Come on now.
You don't know how long she's been there. What if they replaced the Muggle studies teacher a couple of times?
Yeah. What if she's only been at that position? Well, because, okay, maybe she did. Maybe she just left a job writing. Because didn't she get in trouble for writing an article about Muggles or how good they are?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, getting in trouble,
that was her last job.
A little bit of a light way to say it.
Oh, well, yeah. Well. You feel me, though.
I got a question for you. How often do you think that the Muggle studies professor at Hogwarts is just a former graduate who's a Muggle born?
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, that would be the easiest thing. That would be easier than, like, the kid who comes from a Spanish-speaking home taking Spanish in school.
Yeah, right? Like, or like, I was thinking about, like, going on to teach a very low level English class because it's like, well, I've read a book.
How do we feel about do y'all's books have a picture with the?
Oh, I've been listening to the audiobook because my eyes can't be bothered anymore, but I am going to open it to the picture.
Mine has this, like, tiny little sly Dumbledore.
Oh, my God. He looks like a very classic, like, St. Nicholas.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Just the tiniest.
Like, my grandma had an old world Santa collection, yes. Which are, they are frankly much more charming than New World Santa.
Hard agree.
It's like Klaus from Klaus.
I love that movie.
I know, I do too. He looks like a Santa postage stamp. That's so funny.
Yeah,
I love him.
It's very cute. It's not well designed in terms of like book layout because its size in proportion to the rest of the text around it is very off.
Yeah, it's weird.
It looks like an afterthought.
Yeah. Why suddenly in book 7 would you throw this little thing in?
They told Elpheus that he had to cut like 50 words to fit this tiny postage stamp image.
But here's the thing. Also, if it's tiny postage stamp Dumbledore, does it still move?
Oh my God.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that he has more enough limited? Personality to go around.
But like, is it more limited? Like if he...
Because it's like just his face instead of like a whole room.
Right? Oh, is it God. Just like, is he limited to facial expressions or like, can he back up?
Oh my God. Anyway, as a reminder, I did give Zach a whole Patreon bonus episode just to rant about the physics of the paintings at Hogwarts. So feel free to sign up to listen to that. We don't come to any great conclusions, just like right now.
I don't know. I love the implication that it's like a Futurama head in a jar. Yeah. Like, it's just sitting there unable to like...
What an existence.
Honestly, if the no, we can't get into this right now.
See if I care. Just go.
I was gonna say if the pictures are semi sentient, which they seem to be at certain phases of this.
For sure. I mean, think of Phineas Nigelus. Right. That's a sentient ass bitch.
Then like, isn't being printed in a daily newspaper the worst possible fate?
Oh my God.
Like, mute and you really can't communicate well. You just are stuck.
Wears off over time, probably.
Maybe it's like with electronics where like the smaller and like less developed that they are, the less capable they are. So whereas like the portraits are able to have full on conversations, like the
tech.
Stamps are just able to like do like one like...
I
like
that
JPEG GIF.
All they do is wink.
I like that better. I feel like in the Wizarding world, I would have a hard time using newspaper for its like myriad additional uses as like drop cloth and stuff. If it had to be someone's face.
And you know they would just be critical of your work too. Like if you do use them as drop cloth, they're like, I'm going to judge you.
I honestly hope that they print advertisements with like crazy car salesmen, and there's just someone in the paper being like. Sunday, Sunday, Sunday.
Do you just put the picture of the wacky wavy inflatable arm filling tube man in the newspaper at that point?
Does it move if it's not alive to begin with?
Brooke, do you remember when you texted the group chat and said, are you guys getting wacky wavy inflatable arm men or whatever?
Yes.
Whatever the phrasing is. Yeah. And I was like, hey, Brooke, what the fuck are you talking about? That was like the funniest text out of context entirely.
The crazy thing about it is like it's part of the new reactions on Android or whatever. So like if someone in a group text reacts to it, it does like a thing. But I was...
It inflates a man.
It does, but it's like...
It's so crazy.
Here's the thing. If you... open it and the message that's being reacted to is like too far up, you only see like a portion of it, or like it doesn't like take you to that message and show it to you. It doesn't happen when you scroll by it. It's just it occurs when you open the group thread, no matter where you are in that thread. So I was like driving my daughter to daycare, and I like stopped at a red light and I checked my phone real quick and just saw what seemed to be a glimpse of a tube man disappearing out of my very eyes. And I was like, what? It just happened. And then I was like, that's bizarre. Maybe it was like a weird GIF or something, but I'm driving. So I like, you know, whatever, light turned green. I rolled onwards. I get back in my car after dropping her off And I like open the text thread and I see it like off in the corner again. And I'm like, that was what
it's
I texted.
Haunting me.
That's what I texted you guys. Cause I was like, cause then I was like, oh, let me scroll up and see like if I can see what's happening. And there's no indication of it. It only does it the first time when you open the text. So that's when I texted everyone. Cause I was like, am I going crazy?
Do I need to not be driving right now? Can everyone please consult on this?
I seem to be being haunted by a tube man.
Aren't we all?
I think that the best Apple does is when you say congrats, it does like fireworks. Not fireworks, like a more like a cracker exploding. You know what yep. I mean?
If you hold down the send button for Apple, you could get like a whole list of options of different animations and effects and stuff.
Oh yeah, because when Sean's at work and I need to say something about weed or something, I use invisible ink because sometimes he's showing people things on his phone. He said very sternly one time.
I have to preface all of the nudes that I send to my husband while he's actively at work with the next picture is not good for the office.
Classic NSFW.
Yeah.
There's a full article in the paper about our boy Dumb by Elpheus Doge, who will probably never come up again. This is an old man writing about another old man being like, what a great old man. You've read the article before.
Here's the thing. This book really posits that only the smartest, bestest people have childhood trauma.
Wow.
Am I wrong?
No, you're right. You're absolutely right.
What? Wait, who's someone who's not the smartest, bestest? Let's reverse engineer it.
Like, all of the people that lived incredibly charmed lives are literal fucking dementor. Like, not dementors, but like Death Eaters by the end. And then,
but
like,
they did live charmed lives.
Yeah. And then, I mean, I think the only person you could say is like doesn't fall into that is Hermione, largely untraumatized by her childhood, is also the smartest and bestest.
Oh, but she's an exception to every rule.
But that's the thing, I'm like, most people it's like, oh wow, are you okay? And they're like, no, that's what made me great.
I mean, you know, we all feel that way from time to time.
Even Tom Riddle be doing that. Like, it's the only the smartest, bestest grow out of the fertile fields of deep childhood trauma.
It does, like, seem. And then, honestly, talking about fucking Teddy Lupin again, that is what they. I feel like the end of this is set up to be like, look at this special boy.
Teddy Lupin.
Look at this special boy.
Teddy Lupin had to have been, like, really hot as an adult, right?
Surely. With all that drama, surely.
Like, I don't know. He's already got, like, a very cool personality that we see. And then on top of it, he had Tonks and Lupin as parents.
The only thing we know about Teddy by the end of this book series is he makes out.
Right. Like, he's gotta be a little hottie, right?
He makes out.
As he gets older.
So, we're learning about Dumbledore from Elpheus Doge.
Doge?
They met it.
Is it Doge?
I don't. Wait, what? Am I saying it weird? Maybe I am.
You're saying a Doge like an internet meme for dog. Like a Shiba Inu.
I believe that's correct, though.
Is it Doge?
I have no idea. I literally.
D-O-G-E. Doge? Dodge.
D-O-G-E. I think that in the movie they say Doge.
I think that in the audiobook it said Doge.
I'm going to go with a hard G softy doge.
Doge.
Oh, wait, no, not that one. Okay.
Elpheus Doge.
Can you hear?
Yeah, I got a doge.
Isn't a doge...
It's a meme, for sure.
It is a meme.
Well, and I know it's a meme. Now, I'm trying to think. It's like, isn't there a royal title that's
something like that?
No, I'm dead. I'm dead
more.
Serious.
The royal
Doge. I've never heard of this in my life, Andrew.
We're going to both look so silly for laughing when Andrew Googles the fuck
out
of this.
I'm just going to start saying some. There's Dame. There's Thane.
Doge was the Venetian Duke.
Wow, bitch.
You are right. I learned
you know
that.
What? Hey, guys, he has a degree in political science.
I learned that. I actually learned that on the Reading Bug Adventures podcast. So.
Oh.
It's for
children. You didn't learn it good enough, I guess, though.
No.
I'm honestly, Tina, you should have known this. Because I know where I learned about doges was from Robert Langdon, the one of the whatchamacallem books.
Uh-huh.
Has what, something about
called?
A doge.
Don't tell him. What's the name of the book? Just any of them.
I can't remember what that dude's name is off the top of my head. I remembered his name, but I can't remember the...
The Da Vinci Code.
Da Vinci Code,
Robert
yes.
Robert Langdon?
Yeah, by Dan Brown. Some books that I enjoy because I'm an idiot.
I'll keep my opinions to myself. You know how I feel about Dan Brown.
I said I'm an idiot. We're in agreement.
I know.
So obituaries.
Yeah, right. Okay, all right. Let's break those down as minimally as we can. It's literally like this guy being like, he was nice to me when I looked gross. And our friendship grew from there.
Yeah,
and then it's
basically
like,
we learn a considerable amount about like Dumbledore's past, about how his dad was sent to prison for a savage attack on Muggles.
Does this, because I feel like the point of this whole thing is to like build mystery around Dumbledore. Like this is clearly laying some stones for what
if he wasn't perfect?
Well, there's that, but there's also just like, aren't you curious about all these names we just dropped? Did that work for anyone?
I don't know. I don't remember. Well,
I don't think it did for me when I was younger. I was kind of like, all right, he had a weird relationship with his brother and his, you know what I mean? Like, he didn't like his dad. That's fine. You know what I mean?
Yeah, a lot of this book does feel like distraction from, like, the end game, which is what I think as a reader, your brain is really focused on that.
But, like, of the two mysteries that exist in the book, who really was Albus Dumbledore and the other being the Deathly Hallows? The Deathly Hallows are infinitely more interesting.
Yeah, for sure. Because I think that this whole thing was constructed to ultimately give Dumbledore a redemption at the end that he, like, doesn't really deserve.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and it's there's this whole thing where it's supposed to be, like, Harry realizing that Dumbledore had this whole life and he doesn't even know it. And it's like, well, motherfucker, what did you expect? This dude, like, was 100 and something when you first got to his school. Like, did you think that he just, like, popped out of the womb roughly 85 years old and then, you know, matured?
This whole chapter is giving I found my math teacher at a Target. You're like,
that's a great way to put that.
You look different in jeans. Like, that's it.
What?
And then, like, Harry has this whole, like, pseudo-reflective section where he's like, I guess I could have asked him how he was doing.
Yeah. I mean, they talk about how Dumbledore, his mom died, and then soon after that his sister Ariana died in like a fight. She got like hit with something and nobody really knows who did it, and it ultimately led to an estrangement between him and his brother Aberforth, which, like, I get it.
Who also has blue eyes.
Oh my god,
that's probably not important though, right?
No, not at all. We should just pass right on over it.
There are only a few people in this whole series that get to have blue eyes.
Blue eyes.
Oh my god.
Do they twinkle?
You already know. I just feel like things like this about Dumbledore, like, right now I don't really care about them, and I wish that instead, Dumbledore, the character, had taken a moment to be, like, vulnerable with Harry.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So that we could have learned to, like, trust him and understand him. Like, if Dumbledore had said in life, here's some examples of how I'm, like, seriously not perfect and not necessarily to be trusted.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know? I think that could have been a lot more meaningful than just, like, packing it in here.
Well, also, maybe that conversation would have been better than, oops, I ignored you for a whole book and a half.
Yeah. Yep. Totally.
I also, this is one of my favorite little things that will happen every so often, where she writes it in a way where she, when she's talking about the duel between Dumbledore and Grindelwald, and it's like, it was the most amazing duel that anyone has ever seen. Truly, everyone who saw it says that it was fantastic, but like never describes it, because it's one of those things that there's no way that you could actually like describe this fascinating thing.
I mean,
that
you could if you were a good writer,
yeah. But no, she couldn't ever describe this thing in a way that would be like truly that epic, you know? So yeah. Instead we get like this, like, and it was the greatest thing you could have imagined, the greatest fight ever, and then multiply it by five and then add four, and it was even better than that.
Yeah, it was a pretty serious fight. Can't you tell? So basically Harry's like, do any of us really know our fathers or whatever?
Yes, some of us do.
Yeah. And then we jump to the more salacious Rita Skeeter release.
Rita Skeeter. It's an interview with her about how she's going to be publishing an expose book about Dumbledore. She's like, Doge is old and crazy. Read my book. Although they probably could have audiobooks.
Honestly, though, Life and Lies of Albus Dumbledore is a banging title.
It is, and Rita Skeeter is fantastic at selling her book. Like, she constantly loops back to it. She brings it up multiple times. She always focuses the reader on how they'll get so much more if they actually read it. Her product placement is fantastic.
Yeah, top-notch. She definitely knows how to push.
Also, Harry's like amazed that how did she write this book so quickly? And it's like, dude, this is like the most famous person besides you in the entire. It's like,
yeah, the book was already written.
It was already written. Like how every news agency has an obituary written for anyone who has ever been famous ever. You know,
that's so crazy. That's wild.
I do love just the whole sentence of, old Dodgy Dodge can get off his high hippogriff.
She does talk so fun. She is a pretty vivid character, I think, compared to some of the other
characters. I would say that the nickname of Dodgy Dodge would indicate Dodge instead of Doge as a pronunciation.
Oh.
That's true.
Interesting.
You could say Dodgy Doge, but...
Dodgy Doge, actually, that's...
At that point, it starts to sound like not real words. It's like saying salad too many times in a row, and then you're like, salad.
Salad.
Everything's made up, though, you know? All right, we'll pay close attention to that and see if we can get to the bottom of it.
Salad?
Get to the bottom of that salad. Of that salad.
Tina makes good salads. I'll get to the bottom of a Tina Khan salad any fucking day.
I do make good salads. I punch my microphone. I got a chop box. Bitch, get you a chop box, everyone. That's my plug. So Rita Skeeter is saying that Dumbledore dabbled in dark magic. That's like her hook. Mm-hmm. She has a series of hooks. And she claims there's like a whole chapter dedicated to Harry. And she's like, oh, and I know this because I'm quite close to him.
I mean, I do think it's funny that she's like, he has very few friends. And it's like, nah, she got you there, bro.
She's right. When you're right, you're right.
She's like, this poor, traumatized boy with very few friends. And it's like, he's not wrong on that, actually.
You do
actually.
Have very few friends, yeah.
There's no slander in what she said there.
Mm-mm. He doesn't trust anybody. You'll never know love or friendship with these two people.
These two. I think most of the other people in general in my life like me, with the exception of everyone else at school in turns.
Yeah, they do take turns.
Every so often I get a new friend and then I lose an old one.
I mean, does he even gain new friends, though? Because, like, where's Luna Lovegood at? You know, like, where are these new friends at? He doesn't value friendship.
He doesn't.
I'm calling him out as a faker. He does not value friendship.
Does he even actually value love?
I don't know.
If Ginny didn't come up on him, I don't think he ever would have kissed her. And then in terms of like familial love, it ain't it.
But he has the option. That's what he's saying, is that he pities Voldemort because he has the Voldemort doesn't have himself, the option.
I mean, he surrounds himself with people who are better at loving and can send him love.
According to the cursed child, Voldemort confirms books. So Voldemort he might know more than you think about love and friendship.
Oh my god. So Harry picks up the blue mirror shard again and he sees a blue eye, and it's probably Albus Dumbledore and not just fucking Daniel Radcliffe's own blue ass eyes sparkling back at him. Guys, that was such a terrible, boring chapter.
I hate the sentence, the broken mirror, broken bit of mirror danced away from him.
I can picture it being like, ooh, ah, ooh, can't get me. Ooh, ooh, ooh.
The foxtrot.
Oh, what a wild time.
Brooke, what was your favorite part of this chapter?
I honestly like the sheer number of like puns and like 40s radio zingers that Rita Skeeter gets into everything she's ever produced.
Okay. All right, Andrew, what's your favorite part?
Finishing it.
Okay.
Finishing is usually my favorite part as well.
I guess my favorite part is the teacup that comes up again later.
I'm glad we closed the loop on that, because wouldn't you hate to have this teacup mystery just hanging over our head?
Teacup gate.
Oh my god. Okay, so the next chapter stuff does start happening, though, so thank god. And thank god for you guys for coming on this chapter, because I had a good time. I had a good time chatting to you despite the chapter.
Respectfully, always. You assign these to us and I show up. It's not like I don't read the chapter until sometimes like 30 minutes before we start recording. So it's never a situation where I'm like, oh, Tina, can I get a different chapter, please?
I've requested exactly one chapter in the whole history of this podcast. Yep, it's the end of this one.
Andrew requested one later this book, so just you wait. Just you wait. Wow. Let's wrap it up. Let's do plugs. Brooke, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at Passion4Parks on Instagram. And
hell yeah. What are you plugging this week?
I think I did a pretty robust plug for Vassin Mexican Lager. It's very good, guys. You should get some.
It is really good.
I'm trying to think if I've like read or watched anything of note recently. Oh, fuck. Past Lives. So there's this movie. Yeah, I made Andrew watch it.
Oh.
There is a movie that I truly think, even if the idea of like a like slow, if the description of like it's a slow, beautiful, honest film doesn't actually hook you, you will still enjoy the shit out of this movie. It is like, it is the one of the more honest movies I have ever seen about the idea of the one that got away. It's like, what if you actually got to explore that and it was like, what if you actually got to explore that, the one that got away.
Okay.
It's very good.
Okay. I love that. Thank you. Andrew, what are you plugging this week?
It took me 3 months, but I finally finished a book called Flowers of Fire by Huan Chung. And it is the story of the rise of feminism in South Korea. And it is...
That's cool.
It is one of the most depressing things that I've ever read in my life.
Oh,
it
no.
Is, it, yeah. It, well, because, like, feminism there is a word that even, like, modern female activists for women, some of them avoid the word feminism because it has... it's hard to explain, but it's really, like... look down upon in a, I mean, it's not hard to explain. People understand.
Yeah, that, no, I get that, yeah, but, actually.
I realized who I was talking to. But it's an amazing story, but it is basically just like, and now we get more sad, and now we get more sad. Oh, look, we took one step forward, and now we get more sad. Like, it's just, it's not an easy read, but it's a powerful read, so...
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much. I've been your host, Christina. You know where to find me. Definitely go listen to Burn Before Reading.
Man, I love Burn Before Reading. It's so fun.
It's so fucking good.
Thank you. Our episode about Twilight is coming out today, actually. Damn. The episode I alluded to earlier in the episode is coming out next week. Today, it's Twilight. So you gotta go listen to that. It's a very funny episode. It's our longest episode ever. There's just a lot to say about Twilight. Thank you so much. I'm glad that all my friends are enjoying that podcast, because I am too. This week I'm going to plug, I read this book called Whale Fall by Daniel Krauss, and it is about a man getting eaten by a whale. Mm-hmm. And not in like a
not in the dreamy, biblical sense.
not in the biblical sense, not in like a dreamy Life of Pi kind of adventure. It's like a horrifying, like 127 hours or like The Martian level of I could not be more fucked. And how do I escape this situation with only the few tools I have and the knowledge of my brain? He's literally inside of a whale for the It's so crazy. He's getting like actively digested and he's like, how do I get out of this fucking whale? Yeah. So it's absolutely not for the faint of heart. And it was disgusting. And I had to read it all in one sitting because I didn't want to have the feeling of the stress lingering inside of me overnight. But it was a very good book about, do any of us really know our fathers?
I mean, do any of us know Dumbledore? Do we know our fathers?
I guess not. Well, thanks again, guys. I really appreciate you for showing up when I tell you to.
Thank you. I'm always happy to show up when I'm commanded to do so.
What she said.
Hell yeah. Don't worry, guys. The book's going to start in the next chapter, and I think it kind of picks up kind of quickly and keeps going. I think there's like one or two bullshit chapters between now and the end, but let's go do some shit. Let's go kill Voldemort. Yeah, let's go kill Voldemort.
Eventually.
This is the first season that I've had an actual sign-off being, let's go kill Voldemort.
Let's go kill Voldemort.
That's it, potheads. Thanks for listening to The Restricted Section. Hosted and produced by me, Christina Kahn. Theme music produced by Ryan Kahn. Logo designed by Michael Hardison. Please don't find us on social media. I am not doing anything there. However, you are welcome to join our Patreon. For $1 a month, you can gain access to our Discord server, which is a lot of fun. And for $5 a month, you get access to our monthly bonus episodes. There's also a $10 and a $20 tier as well. So please go check that out. We are honored to be part of Deus Ex Media Podcast Network, which features lots of wonderful podcasts for nerds, including this one.
I'm Christina Kahn.
And I'm Leela Hilton.
And this is Burn Before Reading,
the podcast about shitterature.
We're here to examine the terrible writing we did when we were younger.
Like that school project you were really proud of.
Or that poem you wrote when you got dumped.
Well, how about that apology letter you wrote to your mom when you got into that fight?
Or the song you recorded before you knew how to write music.
Okay, don't at me. And we're here to talk about other cringy literary topics along the way.
Like the Library of Alexandria.
And Dewey Decimal.
His name was Melville. Melville Dewey.
Oh, well, do we want to get the clips rolling?
I don't think I ever recovered from this in terms of being cool.
Why did I say any of this?
I do like the drama.
So there is actually quite a bit to unpack here.
Oh, all this drama was so addictive as a teenager.
There's no punctuation to it. I'll start with that.
I actually have no memory of this.
There were so many lies that I was telling it.
It's not terrible.
No one like really taught me how to write a good short story.
That was a journey.
Listen to Burn Before Reading
every Wednesday, wherever pods are cast.
Gosh, you know what's crazy, guys? I'm looking at the book jacket here, and like, remember how in one of our first episodes we were talking about the fact that most of our books were like a Scholastic edition with like a $10 price tag?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm up to 35. I'm 35 for this. Yep. Bitch.
Yeah, that's demand. That's supply and demand, baby.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit that, and it's a little bit like the shift to, I guess it is worth having a hardcover book, but also I know we're talking about the release parties eventually, but you know what else fell out of this?
What?
My midnight release. Where are the Horcruxes?
Save it. Save it, because the three of us are recording about that. Oh my god.
Give you a little
sneak
peek.
That's gonna be awesome. Yeah, it does get, I don't know the science of this, but working in publishing, I have heard enough times that once you get to like 600-800 pages, it gets significantly harder to bind the book in a way that's structurally sound. So that probably is contributing to the price as well.
That makes sense, yeah.
Dave X Media.